Chapter 14. He peeled off his clothes. They were stiff and cold and clammy with blood. He dropped them on the closet floor and stepped into the bathroom, set the shower going. The tray under his feet ran red, and then pink, and then clear. He washed his hair twice and shaved carefully, dressed in another of Joe's shirts and another of his suits, and chose the regimental tie that Froelich had bought, as a tribute. Then he went back out to the lobby. Nagley was waiting for him there. She had changed, too. She was wearing a black suit. It was the old army way. If in doubt, go formal. She had a cup of coffee ready for him. She was talking to the U.S. Marshals. They were a new crew. The day shift, he guessed.
Stuyvesant's coming back, she told him. Then we go meet with Bannon.
He nodded. The Marshals were quiet around him, almost respectful. Toward him, or because of Froelich, he didn't know.
Tough break, one of them said. Reacher looked away.
Yes, it was, he replied. Then he looked back.
But hey, shit happens.
Nagley smiled briefly. It was the old army way. If in doubt, be flippant. Stuyvesant showed up an hour later and drove them to the Hoover building. The balance of power had changed. Killing federal agents was a federal crime. So now the FBI was firmly in charge. Now it was a straightforward manhunt. Bannon met them in the main lobby and took them up in an elevator to their conference room. It was better than Treasury's. It was paneled in wood and had windows. There was a long table with clusters of glasses and bottles of mineral water. Bannon was conspicuously democratic and avoided the head of the table. He just dumped himself down in one of the side chairs. Nagley put herself on the same side, two places away. Reacher sat down opposite her. Stuyvesant chose a place three away from Reacher and poured himself a glass of water.
Quite a day,
Bannon said in the silence.
My agency extends its deepest sympathies to your agency.
You haven't found them, Stuyvesant said.
We got a heads up from the medical examiner, Bannon said. Crisetti was shot through the head with a NATO 7.62 round. Died instantly. Froelich was shot through the throat from behind. Same gun, probably. The bullet clipped her carotid artery. But I guess you already know that.
You haven't found them, Stuyvesant said again. Bannon shook his head.
Thanksgiving Day. Pluses and minuses. Main minus was that we were short of personnel because of the holiday. And so were you, and so were the Metro cops, and so was everybody else. Main plus was that the city itself was very quiet. On balance, it was quieter than we were shorthanded. The way it turned out, we were the majority population all over town 5 minutes after it happened.
But you didn't find them. Bannon shook his head again.
No, we didn't find them. We're still looking, of course, but being realistic, we would have to say they're out of the district by now.
Outstanding, Stuyvesant said.
Bannon made a face. We're not turning cartwheels, but there's nothing to be gained by yelling at us, because we could yell right back. Somebody got through the screen you deployed. Somebody decoyed your guy off the roof.
He looked directly at Stuyvesant as he said it.
We paid for it, Stuyvesant said. Big time.
How did it happen? Nagley asked. How did they get up there at all?
Not through the front, Bannon said. There was a shitload of cops watching the front. They saw nothing, and they can't all have fallen asleep at the critical time. Not down the back alley, either. There was a cop on foot and a cop in a car watching both ends. Those four all say they saw nobody either, and we believe all four of them. So we think the bad guys got into a building a block over, walked through the building and out a rear door into the alley halfway down. Then they skipped 10 feet across the alley and got in the back of the warehouse and walked up the stairs. No doubt they exited the same way, but they were probably running on the way out.
How did they decoy Crosetti? Stuyvesant said.
He was a good agent.
Yes, he was, Reacher said. I liked him. Bannon shrugged again.
There's always a way, isn't there?
Then he looked around the room, the way he did when he wanted people to understand more than he was saying. Nobody responded.
Did you check the trains? Reacher asked.
Bannon nodded.
Very carefully. It was fairly busy, people heading out for family dinners, but we were thorough.
Did you find the rifle?
Bannon just shook his head. Reacher stared at him.
They got away carrying a rifle?
Nobody spoke. Bannon looked back at Reacher.
You saw the shooter, he said.
Reacher nodded. Just a glimpse, for a quarter second maybe, in silhouette as he moved away.
And you figure you've seen him before?
But I don't know where.
Outstanding,
Bannon said. There was something about the way he moved, that's all. The shape of his body, his clothing, maybe. It's just out of reach, like the next line of an old song.
Was he the guy from the garage video?
No, Reacher said. Bannon nodded.
Whatever, it doesn't mean much.
Stands to reason you've seen him before. You've been in the same place at the same time. In Bismarck, for sure. And maybe elsewhere. We already know they've seen you, because of the phone call. But it would be nice to have a name and face, I guess.
I'll let you know, Reacher said.
Your theory's still standing? Stavison asked.
Yes, Bannon said. We're still looking at your ex-employees, now more than ever, because we think that's why Crosetti left his post. We think he saw somebody he knew and trusted.
They drove the half-mile west on Pennsylvania Avenue and parked in the garage and rode up to the Secret Service's own conference room. Every inch of the short journey was bitter without Froelich.
Hell of a thing, Stuyvesant said. I never lost an agent before. 25 years, and now I've lost 2 in a day. I want these guys so bad.
They're dead men walking, Reacher said.
All the evidence is against us, Stuyvesant said.
So what are you saying? You don't want them if they're yours?
I don't want them to be ours.
I don't think they are yours, Reacher said. But either way, they're going down. Let's be real straight about that. They've crossed so many lines I've given up counting.
I don't want them to be ours, Stuyvesant said again. But I'm afraid Bannon might be right.
It's either or, Reacher said. That's all. Either he's right or he's wrong. If he's right, we'll know soon enough because he'll bust his balls to show us. Thing is, he'll never look at the possibility that he's wrong. He wants to be right too much.
Tell me he's wrong.
I think he is wrong. And the upside is, if I'm wrong that he's wrong, it doesn't matter worth a damn, because he's going to leave no stone unturned. We can absolutely rely on him. He doesn't need our input. Our responsibility is to look at what he's not looking at, which I think is the right place to look anyway.
Just tell me he's wrong.
His thing is like a big pyramid balancing on its point. Very impressive until it falls over. He's betting everything on the fact that Armstrong hasn't been told. But there's no logic in that. Maybe these guys are targeting Armstrong personally. Maybe they just didn't know you wouldn't tell him.
Stuyvesant nodded.
I might buy that, he said. God knows I want to. But there's the NCIC thing. Bannon was right about that. If they were outside our community, they'd have pointed us toward Minnesota and Colorado personally. We have to face that.
The weapons are persuasive, too, Nagley said, and Froelich's address.
Reacher nodded. So is the thumbprint, actually. If we really want to depress ourselves, we should consider if maybe they knew the print wouldn't come back. Maybe they ran a test from this end.
Great,
Stuyvesant said.
But I still don't believe it, Reacher said.
Why not?
Get the messages and take a real close look. Stuyvesant waited a beat, and then stood up slowly and left the room. Came back 3 minutes later with a file folder. He opened it up and laid the 6 official FBI photographs in a neat line down the center of the table. He was still wearing his pink sweater. The bright color was reflected in the glossy surfaces of the 8x10s as he leaned over them. Nagley moved around the table, and all 3 of them sat side by side so they could read the messages the right way up.
Okay, Reacher said.
Examine them. Examine everything about them. And remember why you're doing it. You're doing it for Froelich. The line of photographs was 4 feet long, and they had to stand up and shuffle left to right along the table to inspect them all. You are going to die. Vice President-elect Armstrong is going to die. The day upon which Armstrong will die is fast approaching. A demonstration of your vulnerability will be staged today. Did you like the demonstration? It's going to happen soon.
So?
Stuyvesant asked. Look at the fourth message, Reacher said. Vulnerability is correctly spelled.
So?
That's a big word. And look at the last message. The apostrophe in its is correct. A lot of people get that wrong, you know. It's possessive and its it is. There are periods at the ends except for the question mark. So? The messages are reasonably literate.
Okay.
Now look at the third message.
What about it?
Nagley? Reacher asked.
It's a little fancy, she said. A little awkward and old-fashioned. The upon which thing and the fast approaching thing.
Exactly, Reacher said. A little archaic.
But what does all this prove?
Stuyvesant asked. Nothing, really, Reacher said. But it suggests something. Have you ever read the Constitution?
Of what, the United States?
Sure.
I guess I've read it, Stuyvesant said. A long time ago, probably.
Me too, Reacher said. Some school I was at gave us a copy each. It was a thin little book, thick cardboard covers, very narrow when it was shut. The edges were hard. We used to karate chop each other with it. Hurt like hell.
So?
It's a legal document, basically. Historical, too, of course, but it's fundamentally legal. So when somebody prints it up as a book, they can't mess with it. They have to reproduce it exactly, word for word. Otherwise, it wouldn't be valid. They can't modernize the language. They can't clean it up.
Obviously not.
The early parts are from 1787. The last amendment in my copy was the 26th from 1971, lowering the voting age to 18, a span of 184 years. With everything reproduced exactly like it was written down at the particular time.
So?
One thing I remember is that in the first part, Vice President is written without a hyphen between the two words. Same in the latest part, no hyphen. But in the stuff that was written in the middle period, there is a hyphen. It's Vice President with a hyphen between the words. So clearly, from about the 1860s up to maybe the 1930s, it was considered correct usage to use a hyphen there.
These guys use a hyphen, Stuyvesant said.
They sure do, Reacher said, right there in the second message.
So what does that mean?
Two things, Reacher said. We know they paid attention in class because they're reasonably literate. So the first thing it means is that they went to school someplace where they used old textbooks and old style manuals that were way out of date, which explains the third message's archaic feel, maybe, and which is why I figured they might be from a poor rural area with low school taxes. Second thing it means is they never worked for the Secret Service, because you guys are buried in paperwork. I've never seen anything like it, even in the Army. Anybody who worked here would have written Vice President a million times over in their career, all with the modern usage without the hyphen. They would have gotten totally used to it that way. There was quiet for a moment.
Maybe the other guy wrote it,
Stuyvesant said. The one who didn't work here, the one with the thumbprint.
Makes no difference, Reacher said.
Like Bannon figured, they're a unit. They're collaborators and perfectionists. If one guy had written it wrong, the other guy would have corrected it. But it wasn't corrected. Therefore, neither of them knew it was wrong. Therefore, neither of them worked here. Stuyvesant was silent for a long moment.
I want to believe it, but you're basing everything on a hyphen.
Don't dismiss it, Reacher said.
I'm not dismissing it, Stuyvesant said.
I'm thinking about whether I'm crazy, about whether I can afford to back this kind of hunch.
That's the beauty of it, Reacher said. It doesn't matter if I'm completely wrong, because the FBI is taking care of the alternative scenario.
It could be deliberate, Nagley said. They might be misleading us, trying to disguise their background or their education level, throwing us off.